You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, and sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about most. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others, and we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, if you love the CSI, you can join with hundreds of people online to solve actual cold cases. Plus, our baseball teams are looking pretty good, huh? And now that the Angels have clinched a postseason spot, we'll talk about their chances. That and a whole lot more this hour. Let's meet the friends. Erin Myers is here.
A little girl living in a shed after her parents allegedly got mad at her. I'll tell you why.
And here's Jay Campidonia.
Remember when race car driver Tony Stewart killed a guy? Well, the three-time NASCAR champ may be facing charges.
And let's get the latest from Chris Martin.
Everyone's been asking, what's the next major innovation in the world of 3D printing? Well, I'll have the details of that coming up.
All right. Driving me nuts with these stories, you guys. Let's get to them. Start the thing. So glad you tuned in today. And, Erin, we'll start with you. We have this story. Sad story. If everything proves out, sounds like these parents are a little tough. Talk about tough love and a shed, huh?
Yeah, and for something that's not that big of a deal, it sounds like. Apparently, the little girl said she was being punished for sneaking into her parents' room to use their computer. And they all, you know, people found out about it because the little girl actually wrote a note to her neighbor saying she needed food and help, but not to tell her mother. So the woman met the girl outside, and the little girl told her she had been living outside in a shed since August 7th for this punishment. And she appeared to be living in, like, this shed with a bed that was made out of cinder blocks and had a shower with a hose. So not very good.
We city folk don't know what sheds are.
No, not good.
You just think it's made of, right. Ramshackled pieces of, 400-year-old wood just nailed together, and they're kind of creaking and moving. You could see in and out. Right?
There's always bugs around there.
Spiders.
The sheds always have the spiders.
Yes. Spiders, yes. And snakes.
Yeah, it's not, you don't want to be living in a shed. Let's put it that way. So, you know, the parents have been charged with child abuse. They both pled not guilty, but the little girl, who's 15, and her brother, who's also 15, they've now been removed from the home.
How about the neighbors? Their names all over the newspaper?
The neighbor, yes, her name is Kim Wilkinson, and the dad, actually, of the little girl threatened her after she helped. So,
threatened,
not happy.
Threatened her with shed punishment?
Yeah, well, pretty much he said, payback's a beep, beep. So,
uh-oh.
Yeah.
What?
Not
beep, beep.
Well, can I say that? I don't know.
No.
Exactly. So a beep, beep.
What, a bitch?
Yeah. Oh.
No,
see?
You can't say that.
Okay. I don't know. I wasn't sure the rules on these.
Jeez,
but yeah, so pretty much that's what he told her.
Right. How long was she in there? Do we know how long the little girl was in the shed?
August 7th till yesterday.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Over
no
a month,
kidding.
Apparently.
And without facilities.
Nope. No restroom, no shower.
You know, what is wrong with people? I mean, don't you feel... Like, I don't have children, but don't you feel sick when you abuse a child like that? I feel bad when I want to kick a kid in McDonald's because they're screaming.
You should feel bad for that.
Kicking a kid's not good.
Yeah. How do you feel after you kick?
I don't kick.
Okay.
You think
I'm
about
saying,
it?
But yeah,
though?
You're in the grocery store or something, and you're like, oh, my God, somebody take that child outside. Like, yeah. You actually feel kind of, oh, well, you know, it's a kid and everything. Like, how do you do that? What goes through somebody's brain that says, I know a perfect punishment. I'm going to go lock my kid up in the shed.
Well, you got to feel pretty good about yourself and your own authority and the fact that you're the king of the house. And then this is what your subjects have to do if they step out of line. And that's what this guy and perhaps his wife are focused on, that they've got their rules. They've got their authority and nobody's going to cross it, especially
using
their
a computer.
Child.
Yeah.
And so
well, what's on their computer that they didn't
true.
Want her to see?
That's true. They haven't said that one yet.
It's
but.
A bit of psychosis that erases the ability to feel compassion for the kid after about an hour in the shed. Which, you know, for me, an hour is a long time.
It is. That's like putting somebody in solitary confinement.
I made one of my kids stand in the corner for a while. Man, 5 minutes later, I'm starting to feel, I'm racked
you
with
feel
emotional
bad,
pain.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, see, my aunt locked us outside once as kids, all three of my cousins and my two sisters. For 3 hours, she put us in the backyard and was like, you guys are going to play. You are not coming in and watching TV. And she literally locked us all out there, and we had to stay outside until she let us back in.
And look
but
at
least it was just 3 hours.
The emotional damage that did to you is...
Yes.
Is clear today.
Still traumatized by it. Oh, my goodness.
All right. You want to get out and ride a bike real, real fast. right?
Well, some people have. And actually, a woman in Colorado, she broke the motorcycle speed record with a battery-powered bike. Yes, and this bike, it's something her and her husband have been working on. They're both engineers, and they've built it in their backyard over the last 5 years.
Wow.
And it's called their Killjoy Streamline Sidecar. So last month at Bonneville Speedway, that's when she averaged over 240 miles over the six-mile course. And then just recently, she went out to the Salt Flats and 270 miles per hour.
Wow.
So very fast. And now she's kind of, she's the queen of speed.
You get wobble at about 135.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going that fast on anything built in a backyard.
Yeah, it sounds like a soapbox racer. Yeah,
but they are engineers. They are, they're very smart people, it sounds like.
I want to sit in a sidecar.
No way.
While it's not moving.
Yeah.
Just for a picture.
Just to make me happy. You know what? I'm the only married guy here at the table. Jay, you're what, 2 weeks away?
Yeah, somewhere around there. No. We're getting there. We're getting there.
Are you?
Closer and closer.
Yeah, but you know what what the guys learn about the ladies is that things are just nice when the lady's happy.
Mm-hmm. That is very true.
You go to great pains to make sure that happens. Isn't that right?
You don't have to be married to know that, though, right?
Well, I don't know. What's the latest research say, Aaron?
Well, it's pretty much telling us what we already knew, but in the October issue of the Journal of Marriage and Family says the old saying, happy wife, happy life, is absolutely true. They found that women that are happily married, their husband's overall life satisfaction gets a boost regardless about whether they feel good about their marriage or not. So even if they're not in a happy marriage, they're still happier if the wife is happy.
It's because we're easy.
So,
and you don't get all that nag, 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 nag. Oh. Pick up your stuff. Clean up the yard.
Where does that come from?
I don't know. It's
why is it always nagging nature? Just when you ask somebody, pick up your stuff?
See, that's what I tell the GF. I go, it's not nagging, sweetheart. All you're doing is asking me.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Good answer. Just scored points because she listens.
Okay. Wow. But that's true. And they said that. They said if women aren't happy, they're going to, confront you a little more.
Yeah, well,
I'm learning, Phil.
Yeah, right.
See that?
Don't ever out loud even contemplate saying anything like, well, at what point does my girlfriend become my mom?
Yeah.
Never once should you say that out loud. Wait a minute. What?
Never.
What?
Never.
What just happened?
I didn't hear anything.
Me neither. All right. Well, thank you, Aaron. You're happy, right? Everything's good?
I'm good. I have lots of animals.
Oh.
Thank you.
Oh, God.
I have to get that one in there, you know?
Just double checking. All right. We were talking about the lady driving real fast on the motorcycle. And Jay, we're all familiar with this Tony Stewart thing with the sprint car race. And unfortunately, a guy got out and he got killed. Tony Stewart's ran into him. So this story won't go away.
Allegedly,
yeah.
Ran into him. What exactly happened was Tony Stewart was driving behind a guy, Kevin Ward Jr., in a dirt track race. Tony Stewart looks. There's tape of this cell phone video from the stands, and it looks like Tony Stewart spun the guy out. Guy gets out of his car and he's screaming and yelling and he's pointing at Tony Stewart. Tony Stewart's driving by. And it looks like his car fishtails and it hits the guy. The guy gets sucked up underneath the tire and is thrown into the air and dies.
Yeah.
Right there. Now, Tony has said, look, he actually took a few weeks off NASCAR racing. He has said that he didn't see the driver. And Kevin Ward Jr. was wearing an all black racing suit that night. And it's a dirt track race. This is not the big NASCAR. You know, the giant lights, the big, the TV.
And it was on the edge of the curve where you have to get sideways to power into the straightaway anyway, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So Tony says, hey, look, I didn't see him. This is a terrible accident. And he's cooperated with authorities. Well, this is what's basically happened. So the Ontario County, which is in New York, Sheriff's Department, they had jurisdiction over the crash. They brought in a giant forensic team. They brought in video enhancement team. They brought in racing experts. They brought in all of these people to do a quote-unquote thorough investigation. Well, they couldn't figure out if Tony Stewart should face charges. So a grand jury will decide whether NASCAR star Tony Stewart will face charges in the death of Kevin Ward Jr. And basically, this is what's going to happen. They're going to take all of this information. This grand jury is going to take all of this information that the Ontario County Sheriff's Department has compiled and say, okay, you guys figure it out. So the grand jury will decide whether or not if he'll face charges. Tony released a statement moments ago. It's 1 o'clock real time right now here on the Pacific Ocean that we in the studio. And 25 minutes ago, he released a statement. Hey, I look forward to the process. I want to keep cooperating with officials. And he doesn't say that he's innocent. He just looks forward to the process being completed. Now, Tony has raced in two races since then, and he hasn't actually done very well. He's come in mid-pack. He hasn't won anything. And he's been quiet.
You know, that whole thing about allegedly.
Yes.
Tony Stewart's car did hit the other guy, and the other guy died. We know these things happen.
True.
What has to be decided is if it was done maliciously, if there was manslaughter or murder in charge.
Correct.
Or even ignorantly, right? Like he was attempting, the thought is maybe he was attempting to fishtail and scare him.
Involuntary manslaughter.
And it went too far.
That is true. And Tony Stewart, for those who don't know, is a hothead. And if he's probably NASCAR's premier hothead. They call him Smoke. That's kind of his nickname. But he's the guy that'll get into a fight with a pit crew after a race or in the middle of a race, or he's thrown his helmet at other cars. This guy does not mix words. He's a fighter. That's the way he is. A lot of these guys are hotheads, but Tony is a real
the hottest
hothead.
Of the hotheads.
Exactly.
Can you take him?
No, I don't think so. Right, you got to be tough to be a NASCAR guy.
You think
no,
so?
I think you could. Oh, he's like 5'6 or something. You know,
no,
if you see him in real size.
No, I've met him and I've interviewed him multiple times. But you got to have some upper body strength to hold that car going, 200 miles an hour around turn three.
And superhuman concentration.
Absolutely. Yeah. So he could figure out what I'm going to. He's going to see my punch in slow motion.
Yeah.
Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Hey, you know what? We're talking about cars, and I don't know if you're like me, but I dream about making my own car. I know what would be in my car. I know how it would be designed. It would just be it would be the best car ever. But, you have to go to the feds and get approval, and you have to have all these regulations and all that sort of thing. But smart, pointy-headed, beanie-headed, techie
brainiacs,
thank you, have figured out how to make their own car. And Chris, they've used one of these newfangled 3D printers to do it. Don't tell me about it yet. I cannot wait to hear this story, and you'll hear it as well next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Well, we're back here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thanks for listening to this program and to every other one that we've ever done. We're up to about 135 shows or so, and they're all available at philhewlettandfriends.com, also on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn and all the usual places. Just search Phil Hewlett and Friends. You'll find us and listen and tell your friends. Share. We thank you for doing that. All right, so we're talking about, before we took the break, about coming up with your own idea for a car and making it, somehow making it. But it seems like there are so many impediments to actually setting up your manufacturing, building a factory, and then getting parts and workers and union contracts and all this kind of stuff and regulations from the feds and all the rules that you have to follow. It's just impossible. So you have this great idea, forget it. It's too hard. I give up. But if you're a techie beanie head, Chris, you can do this in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, you can just use a 3D printer. The International Technology Show was in Chicago recently, and a team of engineers used a 3D printer to create all the parts for and then completely assemble a car, a fully functioning car, which is pretty impressive, right?
How long did it take them?
It took them 44 hours, and they did the whole thing in front of a live audience. So they're behind this restricted area. They create all the parts on this 3D printer machine. Then the engineers get together, put all these parts together, and then they have a fully functioning electric car that they drove.
They drove
it off
so
the showroom
crazy.
Floor. Yeah.
Wow.
So it was. It was. Well, they had a battery charge. Did they make? They didn't make the battery out of the printer.
They didn't. There was a few things that they didn't make. The wires, the suspension, and the battery were not made by a 3D printer.
You can get that stuff at Radio Shack.
Right. And all the other major components were
and
made there.
AutoZone.
Oh yeah, true.
The guy that designed it actually won a prize. He was competing against 206 other engineers.
He better win a prize.
$5,000, which, you know, that's nothing to shake a stick at.
That's every kid's dream to build a car, isn't it?
Well, the other cool thing about it is this car only uses about 40 parts in total compared to the tens of thousands of parts that most of the major manufacturing automakers that we know of
use. Yeah, and you know, no matter how small one of those tens of thousands of parts is, when you try to buy it and then have it installed, it's a $500 job.
Right, right. Unless you have your own 3D printer, and then you just put some silicon in this thing and
does it say how sturdy it is?
I was going to ask.
It's pretty sturdy looking. You know, I mean, I have a picture of it. It actually looks kind of like an overgrown... what do you call it? Go-karts? Like a large go-kart.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and okay.
It's
we're not talking a full-size sedan or anything.
No, it fits two people in it.
Send that picture
almost
to our...
Almost looks like one of those buggy
our
cars.
Web geeks.
It does. Without the roof.
Send the picture like to the web geeks so we can put it on the website.
Yeah.
So
it's called the Strati, by the way.
Can you print out a sense of safety?
It doesn't look very safe. It looks like if you got in a car accident in it, you'd be in big trouble.
All right. All right. Well, while we're talking about tech, I mean, that certainly being able to print out a car is useful. But, Jay, the tech beanie heads have come up with perhaps no, this isn't useful, is it?
Oh, it's going to be very useful. A bunch of guys in Japan have basically got us one step closer to having sex with our Xbox.
This is so sad.
They have developed a booby-squeezing simulator. Okay? Now, they use a bunch of different technology. It's basically a video game. Okay? Mm-hmm. And you have 3D glasses on your head, and then you use a mouse, like a mouse pad, that has two giant breasts on it.
All right, so you're squeezing something in reality.
So you're squeezing something in reality, and then the image... of a woman, mm-hmm. and you get to choose your woman, blonde, brunette, Asian, black, whatever you want.
Categories.
Exactly. And you squeeze, and then you have to please your woman.
Oh, so you get it's a game, and you get points
it's
based on
game.
How good you are.
That could be really bad for your self-esteem, though, if you're not good at that game.
Well, that's what the game is there for. Then you can get better.
You
well,
learn,
the,
okay.
Well, the different women that you choose in this game, do they have different, different things for different women?
Oh, yeah, some a little softer, some a little more aggressive,
the breasts,
some like a little pinch, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. And some will actually react negatively to unauthorized touching.
Oh, good. They're going to learn manners, too.
Don't like it. Exactly. See?
Stay away from the scar.
See, you're not going to need a happy wife after this comes out.
But that's the whole thing. You learn how to please. You learn how to listen. You learn how to react. You learn how to be with your woman.
So she responds with, like, this is not a radio dial. Calm it down.
Yeah. I know they made it in Japan, but we are not tuning in Tokyo there, big guy.
No. All right. Well, while we're talking about what pleases a woman and what doesn't, I actually have something here that's related. And is it even possible to share a bedroom with somebody who doesn't do at least one thing that drives you crazy?
What do you mean?
No. Yes. It is impossible.
Probably.
It is.
We've got scientists who've tried to work this out, and a new survey now has asked people to name their significant other's bedroom habit that bothers them the most, and here are the top 10. We'll start with number 10.
Oh, God.
Talking in their sleep.
That doesn't bother me.
Yeah. No? It depends what they're talking about.
Yeah, if they're talking about somebody else.
God, I hate my girlfriend. I got to sleep with her every night.
Yeah, oh, I know, right?
God, she smells.
In fact, number 9 is ignoring basic hygiene.
Yeah.
That can be gross, man.
Leaving clothes on the floor.
Oh, that's a big one.
Stealing the covers.
That's now, annoying.
Of course, who needs the covers with the weather we've been having out here?
Exactly.
Working in bed. What, like building stuff?
Probably on the laptop.
Yes.
He's got an erector set.
Going through email.
Wait a minute. The imagery is going
south. I have to rebuild this carburetor, honey.
Yeah. All right. Only number 5 here is snoring. Mm-hmm. Using a laptop or iPad in bed instead of talking. Well, talking in bed? Should that be on the list? Smoking in bed.
Oh, that's gross.
Well, that's dangerous too, isn't it?
Yeah. That's true.
Yes.
I didn't even think of that.
Is that your Ember?
No.
Leaving a mess on the nightstand.
Yeah.
Oh, that's high up there. But
oh, like your fast food
package? Oh, well, that's different. Okay, something gross mess. Then.
Yeah,
yes.
Like,
okay.
Oh, wait, honey, did we eat all the turkey from dinner?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll be right back.
Well, it smells completely different in the morning when
yeah,
you wake up,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Sitting
then
there
just
all night.
Put the plate on the nightstand.
It smelled edible when you cracked it open. And then finally, the number one is eating in bed.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, unless, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you bring the tray and it's breakfast in bed, that sort of thing. Then you can't complain, can you?
The strawberry and whipped cream always does the trick.
Strawberry and whipped cream. Did you know that a new survey of women over 35 found that the majority would rather look young than look thin?
What?
You can always get thinner much easier than you can look younger.
Yep.
So I can understand that one.
And the top three signs that you're aging are wrinkles, sagging breasts, and losing teeth.
Oh, God. How old are we talking
well,
here?
Granted, this was a British survey.
Yeah.
And apparently, in Britain, losing teeth is something that you can expect. Oh, some other things on the list as well. Forgetting people's names. More frequent trips to the doctors. Forgetting where you left things.
What are we? Are we 80 trying to look 70?
Yeah, needing naps, back pain.
Oh, my God.
Wanting to listen to the news instead of music.
Grabbing Flexol 454 versus suntan lotion.
Yeah, firing up the booby squeezing game.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Does that mean you're getting old or just sad? Wow. All right, let's see. Where are we? Taking a break, but do you watch the CSI shows on TV? CSI New York, L.A., Vegas, Fresno? Hey, if you're intrigued by the tools the experts use on CSI and fascinated by unsolved mysteries, you could join the hundreds of amateur web sleuths who seek to solve the country's coldest cases. That's true. We're going to hear about it next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Oh, man, we should run a show during the breaks. I'm sorry, I'm not going to talk about it, but Jay's trying to wash his hands of it right now.
Oh, it's brutal.
This is Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm sorry I brought it up. I'm Phil Hewlett, and Jay Campadonia is here. Chris Martin is here, and of course, Aaron Myers. We're all here. And all over the country, there are people trying to solve unsolved murders. And they are not police detectives. They're just ordinary people. What drives them to solve mysteries? Well, let's bring on our first guest of the program. She's a journalist. She wrote the book, The Skeleton Crew. It's in our store at Phil Hewlett and Friends. Deborah Halber, hello.
Hi, Phil.
Hey, there are a bunch of Jane and John Does out there. How many?
Well, the National Institute of Justice estimates that there are actually 40,000 across the U.S.
And these are attached to crimes that the police just can't figure out, right?
Not all of them died violently. Some of them are accident victims. Some of them are suicide victims. But, a big percentage of them are homicide victims. These are unsolved crimes.
It seems to me, with all the modern technology available to us, DNA tests, et cetera, that these numbers of hard-to-solve murders should be diminishing, are they?
It does seem that way, and there are certain steps that have been taken to try to make matches more frequently, but it's still an enormous problem, and it's far from solved. A lot of these cases go back decades.
Right, and all right, so let's get into these armchair detectives, because that's what you wrote about in your book, The Skeleton Crew, right?
Yes.
All right, so explain how you became haunted by this Lady of the Dunes case. It's a murdered girl. She was found without her hands on Cape Cod. What did you learn by trying to give this young lady her identity back?
Yeah, I did. I came across this case accidentally. It's a bit of a celebrity, minor celebrity kind of thing here in Massachusetts. I think it's considered the oldest unsolved murder in Massachusetts. And I'd heard about it off and on for years, but then I came across it just a couple of years ago, and it just was mind-boggling to me how she still was unidentified. So I kind of went to Google this kind of thing, and I realized she wasn't alone. There was this 40,000 figure, and then I actually realized that there are people out there trying to solve some of these cases on their own.
And, all right, so but they're not authorized to do this, right?
No, they're completely volunteers. They're doing it pretty much as a hobby. You know, a lot of them are kind of underemployed. Their day jobs are not terribly intellectual, but they're really smart folks, and they come home and they spend hours on the internet trying to solve some of these.
So it's an outlet for them, but just the same, I mean, to what degree do they have access to the process?
Well, in the earlier days of the internet, in the 1990s, people just started, volunteers just started creating databases and logging this information, just information that you'd find in public sources, microfiche, newspaper articles, archives, and they just started putting it all up there. And the big difference between the way law enforcement approached these cases and the way these volunteers approach them is that these databases were really national in scope. They cross state lines. And that's not something that happens, you know, in law enforcement investigating this kind of case.
So how are you guys perceived by law enforcement? Like, let's say if you find a clue here or a tidbit there, I mean, do you run to the law enforcement? How do they look at you guys?
There's a bit of a, you know, I don't want to take credit for including myself in the band of web sleuths. I actually realized I'd make a pretty lousy web sleuth. It takes a lot of patience and a lot of attention to detail and a lot of hours dedicated to the cause. But there is a split in the community. Some people would like to and do go directly to the police and want to interface with them and get, you know, more information if they can, or give them potential matches. Other people realize that the police don't really look kindly on that kind of help a lot of the time, so they have committees that vet potential matches and then just submit the ones they think are most likely.
Yeah, I can imagine at the police station, oh boy, here comes Bob again.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, right. All right,
they
so
actually,
these...
Some police actually call them the donut, as in Jane and John Doe.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's a good name. I like that. And cops like donuts. But in this case, they don't. So is there any amount of, police department blessing going on with this? Because there have to have been some success stories that you can recount for us, right?
Yes. So in my book, I do tell a bunch of success stories. They're pretty mind-boggling, some of them, and they all start like an episode of Bones or CSI with a body being found, and then the mystery is, who is this person? And there have been a handful of successful web sleuths who have made these matches, which are literally needle in a haystack kind of adventures, but they have done it, And there is a range of acceptance now in the law enforcement community. I've had one detective in Phoenix say he really has come to depend on them, and web sleuths have helped him solve cases that he could not have solved on his own.
How about that? And so the producers of CSI, have they given you a call yet?
There is some TV interest, but I won't spill the beans on that.
Well, all right. When something comes together, I hope you'll give us a call back, because this sounds like fun. So let me ask you this. If I decided I wanted to get busy with this sort of thing, because I don't use my brain all that much during my day job, and when I get home, I want to get a little more intellectual. Is there a basic website? Is there a message board or something like that where all of these people kind of gather?
It's divided up somewhat, but there are a few websites. One of the oldest and most established is called the Doe Network, again, as in Jane and John Doe. And there are others. There's websleuths.com and canyouidentifyme.org. And the official one, the National Institute of Justice one, that they hope will become the repository for the entire country, is called NAMUS.gov. And you can go on to any of those. You can search by your city, your state, your county, and I guarantee you, you'll be shocked at what pops up.
Yeah, and if you're one of those people who calls 911 when your French fry order comes in the wrong size bag, then you shouldn't go to these websites. We're just warning you now. That's your admonishment.
Well, yeah, unless you do want to, spend the time, and you might actually come up with something that you want to pass along.
Fantastic. Your book is The Skeleton Crew. I love this topic, and perhaps more people should get involved. It's really what community is all about, and thanks to the internet, we're one big one, aren't we?
We definitely are.
Thank you very much for spending some time with us, Deborah Halber. Again, The Skeleton Crew is the book. It's available in the store at Phil Hewlett and Friends. And we hope to talk to you when you have a big TV show, Deborah.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So long. How about that? Got you interested in doing anything like that? What do you think?
I think it's very interesting, actually. And I know when the Malaysian airline disappeared, that's people were getting online and looking at satellite photos trying to help, too. So it's, you know, something that's even broader than just that.
Yeah.
So.
Can you imagine how annoyed the pros get, though?
Oh, very, very much so. Who's this Yahoo?
And yeah. then if you outshine them and right. actually solve it.
You just go, you know what, that's really bad information, but I'm going to take this from you anyway just to make sure.
We've seen it a lot even here in L.A., like when the riot happened in Huntington Beach and some of the other things that have happened where the cops post and say, hey, we're looking for any information that we can get on this case or if anybody saw anything.
Yeah, yeah, true. All right, so, hey, you know what? I'm going to shift gears here. Hold on. Hang on a second. Flipping a U-turn here. Last night, the Angels, looking around the table, Angels fans, look at Aaron doing a little dance, doing a halo dance.
Hey.
The Angels clinched a spot in the postseason. And so we're going to talk a little OC baseball next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Thanks for tuning in to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil. Aaron, Jay, and Chris are here. They're the friends, and we count you among them. The friends category. Hey, we're thrilled as baseball fans and Angels fans here in Southern California. Of course, the Dodgers are doing great, but the Angels, best record in the majors, best shot at 100 wins, good shot at locking up home field advantage for the postseason. Joining us live to talk about it, baseball analyst, former Angels minor league play-by-play guy, just an all-around sports guy, knows his baseball, knows his Angels, Sam Farber. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Phil. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on. Way to finish strong, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the team's just playing outstanding baseball. I think there were a lot of people that feared when Garrett Richards went down with an injury that, you know, that would be a turning point in a negative direction. And for whatever reason, it's ended up being one in a positive direction. This team has really rallied, and they are playing far and away the best baseball in the major leagues right now.
And a lot of fun to watch, too. But for all the beatdowns the Halos have given to the A's and to the Mariners, they may still have to meet one of those two teams in the postseason, because the wild card team that emerges from that one-game playoff that they have could be Oakland, it could be KC, or Seattle. Which of those matchups do you think the Angels would prefer if the playoffs began today?
I think if everything was starting today, most people out there would say, aside from the Angels, most teams don't say who they want to play. They just say, let's get it on with whoever shows up to play us in the series. But most analysts would say that Kansas City would be the preferred matchup. You look at postseason baseball throughout the history of the game, and really pitching wins championships. So you look at the starting pitching rotations for each of those teams, and to be sure, Kansas City's got a lot of talent in their rotation. Big game James Shields is over there. He's certainly someone to be wary of. But top to bottom, the A's first, and then the Mariners have the strongest rotations of those three teams you mentioned. So I would say Kansas City would be on the wish list of most Angels fans, if not the Angels players themselves.
Yeah, we'll get into the Angels players in a moment, but there's an off chance the Royals could catch the Tigers in the Central. Then that increases the potential for the Angels getting Detroit in the first round. Talk about that matchup.
And that's just as scary because Detroit's rotation is filled with Cy Young winners, just like Oakland's is. And Seattle, they've got a leader in Felix Hernandez, who's just as scary as anyone out there in Major League Baseball. So Detroit would certainly put up an interesting matchup. And really, any of these matchups are difficult. Even Kansas City, you know, we're saying that might be the easiest of the group, but that's relatively speaking. When you look at what the Angels have done, best record in baseball, on pace potentially to get 100 wins this year. But when you look at their combined record against teams in the postseason, it's slightly below 500, and that's not a knock on the Angels. That's not uncommon in baseball. Most teams that are in the playoffs, they get there by beating up on teams that aren't going to make it, and then when they go head-to-head with teams that are going to be in the postseason mix in that World Series conversation, it's closer to 500 because they're more evenly matched. They're just good, solid teams. So, you know, whoever the Angels play, they are going to certainly understand that it's going to be a tough one. But the beauty of it all is that as well as the Angels have played, they'll hopefully have home field advantage throughout the American League postseason play. And then because of the All-Star game, they'll have it in the World Series as well.
Yeah. Win the West. First time in 5 years. And there are so many players to choose from, but who do you consider to be the key players right now to keep the Angels focused on the larger goal?
Well, Mike Trout is, you know, far and away the best player in baseball, in my opinion. And I'm not alone in that. He's one of the most entertaining players we've, you know, ever seen in the game. But for postseason baseball, I mean, there isn't really anything that has been thrown at Mike Trout, All-Star games, early seasons in his career that has rattled him. He just seems to approach everything, take it in stride, and lead the team on to victory or at least get himself you know, personal records and accolades. But in the postseason, it being his first time, you can't make that assumption. So I'll say Albert Pujols. He's someone who's led the St. Louis Cardinals to a World Series title, and that obviously was the hope when he came to Los Angeles and Anaheim, was that he would do the same for the Angels. So for the hitters, I would say Albert Pujols would be a key player to watch, and hopefully he's able to get back healthy and be involved in this run towards the postseason and then in through it. And then for the pitching staff, Jared Weaver. He's someone who has been through the ringer in terms of his professional career. He has seen it all. And with a pitching staff that a lot of people think, you know, relatively speaking to the other teams that we just talked about, Detroit, Oakland, might be at a little bit of a disadvantage comparatively speaking, or at least it's a more even strength type of situation, you definitely want your ace to go out there and pitch like one.
Sam, you mentioned Pujols. Didn't he get hurt? Didn't he pull a hammy or something last night?
He did. He was a little gimpy going into second, which makes it all the more important that, you know, he gets back. It at least is that positive mindset in the dugout. Really, for this team, offense has been a strength for most of the year. They're pretty deep when it comes to offense. So not even so much as his bat, although his bat would certainly be missed if it had to be absent for any length of time. But you want that positive influence of someone who's been there and won that. And he has been there and won that when you're talking about the World Series. So even though he's a little nicked up right now, priority one is make sure he and the rest of the team is healthy. But you want someone there with that mindset, that positive outlook, someone who has been there and can help lead the team back to where the Angels want to be.
Right. And when you talk about guys like Pujols and Hamilton, you know, they're young men by comparison in society, but by baseball years, they're grandpa old. And so I wonder if Socha is going to start sitting players for the 11 remaining games.
Probably less sitting, more resting. And certainly with Pujols, with the injury, we'll probably see him take a few days off. But baseball is such a game of routine that you don't want to let players get out of their routine. I mean, a lot of times you'll see guys go on the All-Star break, and if they don't play in that All-Star game, they come back and they're a little fuzzy for a day or two just because they're out of their routine, they're out of their element. As hard as the game can be on these players playing 162 games over the course of 6.5-7 months, they need routine in order to be able to compete at the level that they're accustomed to. So I think rather than see guys take, you know, a week off over the next 2 weeks as the season winds down, you'll probably see them take a day off here and there. And definitely, you know, after six innings, a couple at bats, some of those star players will go ahead and take a seat, especially if the Angels are able to clinch home field advantage in the next week or so.
All right, Sam, here's the big question out here on the West Coast. Everybody wants to know, how probable is it that we have a freeway series World Series, so an Angels-Dodgers World Series?
Well, it certainly looks good because the better than, you know, most years or most situations, it's very rare. It's rare to have those kinds of dream matchups. You know, they don't happen very much, but it looks good because the Angels do have home field advantage. And when you think of what they need going head-to-head with teams that maybe have slightly deeper rotations in terms of overall aces like Oakland and Detroit. You want that home field advantage to go and be able to take control, especially with Oakland. That's a team that, as good as they are on the mound, they are not all that hot at the plate, especially right now. So they don't do well outside of Oakland. You definitely want it for the Angels to get them on your home turf. And just by and large, home field advantage is huge. So you think the Angels have a good chance. And then for all the reasons that I've been saying, Detroit and Oakland are teams to watch out for. That's the reason that L.A., the Dodgers, are the team to watch out for, because they've got the great pitching staff on the National League side. So you got to feel whoever they match up with, they're at least going to be a slight favorite, even if they don't have home field advantage, just because they're going to be able to throw Kershaw out there. They're going to be able to throw Greinke out there twice each. And those two alone, you would think, would give you an edge to win the NL and set up that freeway series.
Sam Farber, you know your stuff, and it's a pleasure to speak with you. We'll catch up with you later in the postseason, I suspect. Thanks for giving us your perspective on the Angels moving on into the postseason. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
All right. Go team. By the way, I'll be working the game on Saturday.
Oh, you're doing the PA stuff, huh?
Yes, I am. I was hoping that this clinching thing would wait a while so that I could be there, you know, the night when they clinch, but they went ahead and took care of business a little early. How about that, huh?
Yeah, they've been on a roll.
Nice. Now's when it gets good. October's the time. Everybody's going to start watching baseball.
Yeah, SoCal is baseball town right now. It really is. I mean, it's. Can you think of any other city where at the same time, I mean, how often were the Yankees and the Mets both in contention?
Probably once.
Yes. And what other city? Well, you can go to Texas. Were the Stros and the Rangers ever contenders at the same time?
Maybe.
Yeah? How about the A's and the Giants?
That's a good probability.
Yeah.
Because those are two solid teams. They have been for the past 15 years or so.
Right, yeah. And then
White Sox and Cubs, can they face off?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. You know, the crazy thing about the Angels is they're up 10.5 games.
Yeah.
That is unheard of.
They're dominating.
Yeah.
Absolutely dominating. Yes, I love that. All right, guys, we have such a big, big hour coming up next. And I cannot believe that this hour is already done. In fact, it seems like we have more time, don't we?
What'd you do? Look at the clock?
Yeah, I did.
You would be correct, Phil.
I just looked at the clock, and wait a minute, I'm not getting out of here yet.
You're not finished.
Hold on a second. Hold on. I've got something here for you. Did you know that mosquitoes like biting people with type O blood?
What?
More than any other blood type.
Yeah, I know that. I know that real well.
You're a type O?
Yeah. I was always told it was just because I was sweet, but apparently it's my blood type.
Well, see, that's the thing. Funny. Other things that attract mosquitoes are not sweet, but sweat.
Ooh. Mm.
Having alcohol in your bloodstream, Chris. Being pregnant. Have you checked?
So far, I'm a check mark on all of these.
And wearing black, dark blue, or red.
So
all of those things attract mosquitoes.
Color, huh? That's interesting.
Yeah.
So if you're a pregnant woman on a run drinking alcohol wearing a black suit, you're in real trouble.
Big time. There. Thanks for wrapping that up for us. Hey, there's more to come, including your tsunami escape route. You ever thought about that? You're going to need one. And dreams of cooler weather. Oh, from the colors of fall with our travel dude. Those stories and a whole lot more in our second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Yes, you're listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others, and we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, when the colors of the leaves change, our travel guy knows where to go, and he'll be right here for now. Plus, when a tsunami hits, where will you run to? You better hear where the water is running first. The friends are here, Aaron Myers, Jay Campadonia, and Chris Martin. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thank you once again. So we'll get things rolling here with you, Aaron. A lot happening, and a beloved actor could be putting on some striped pajamas soon.
Yeah, we're talking about John Goodman. He's scheduled to be retried for manslaughter for the 2010 death of Scott Patrick Wilson. Now, Wilson's vehicle had a stop sign placed behind it. Goodman allegedly rammed into that vehicle with his Bentley while under the influence of alcohol. And he actually was found guilty in 2012, but they're going to retry him now because they said the jurors misbehaved during that trial. So
what did they do? Ask him for an autograph?
It doesn't say what they did, but they were just seen and heard misbehaving during the hearing, apparently. So now they're actually going to bring in jurors from outside of West Palm Beach, which county, which is where this all is taking place, so they can avoid bias. But I mean, everybody knows who John Goodman is, so it's kind of hard, I think, no matter what, to avoid bias in any kind of case where it's a celebrity.
This is the first time I'm hearing about this. Like, I don't remember this being major headlines or on TMZ and all this. Who squashed all this? Like, do we know?
No, and they've done a really good job, because the same thing, I saw it this morning and it kind of shocked me. I went, wait, I kind of remember this, but yeah, this, I mean, had no idea.
Yeah, you know what, it might have happened on the same day that Kim Kardashian put out that beach photo of herself from behind.
Well, anyone's gonna lose publicity when that's going on. Yeah. So
I don't get it. If he was found guilty and they're retrying because everybody was horsing around in the courtroom, can't the results only get better for him? Because if you're already found guilty, a retrial would not be guiltier.
Well, the prosecution has a chance to retool and come up with a better argument this time around. It's like a, you know, take two.
So, but it could be a good thing for him, right?
It could be good. Right. It could be a lot worse. He could be going to jail.
The sentence could change
and
also, I suppose.
I gather his attorneys, if they're worth their salt or their $400 an hour fee or whatever it is.
That's the cheap one.
Yeah. That they're going to ask the judge to throw this out.
Easily.
Yes.
Several more times before the trial actually happens.
And of course.
It'll be delayed for another 4 or 5 years. And that's what they want to do, to keep their guy out of jail. So delay the start of the trial is just one of their tactics.
I love John Goodman.
Yeah. What good is he going to be to us in jail?
Jeez. Way to be selfish.
Well, come on.
It's a good point.
Why, in fact, do you love him?
I love him because he entertains me, but he's got plenty of films out there that I could watch on DVD.
And that's not self-serving. There's no personal love involved.
Saying.
You don't want to meet him and have dinner with him and hang out with him.
I was covering the Emmys a couple years ago, and he was very nice to me. So there you go. There's a personal connection.
So maybe there is. Okay, fine. So you're not a completely selfish fool.
We're not besties.
No?
But he's a good guy. He was nice to me.
All right.
And he didn't have to be. He's so, John Goodman.
Yeah.
And who am I? I'm Jay. I'm nobody.
Well, come on. You're not going to jail.
Well, that's very true. Yeah.
I mean, at least that's what the background check told me, that there's no reason for me to believe. I mean, people do background checks, don't they?
They do. And apparently, David Tovar, Walmart's vice president of corporate communications, is finding out that hurt him a lot. He's actually leaving the retail giant after a background check revealed he didn't finish his college degree. And he actually said that, you know, they found out while he was undergoing an assessment to get promoted to senior vice president. And he's been with the company for 8 years. And he said he just kind of slipped his mind. He wasn't trying to hide anything from them. And they said as soon as it was flagged, he was like, yeah, no, you're right. I didn't finish school. But he did walk in his graduation. Mm. It just wasn't until later that he realized he had a few more credits he needed to finish. And he just never did.
You know, I had the foresight ever since I started using email and saving documents on a computer, on a hard drive, and then on the cloud and all of that. I completely left out that PhD stuff I used to put on my resume.
Did you really?
Yeah, well, back in the day when you just printed it out and, you know, it's probably all gone. I'm pretty sure that stuff's all gone now.
Yeah.
No, I don't have a PhD. All right, so...
Neither does this kid.
Oh, what? You have another story?
I do, but...
What is this about?
This one I have to apologize for in advance because it's very unladylike of me to actually read it, but it made me go, oh, come on, you've got to be kidding. So a teenage employee at a Georgetown Papa Murphy's Pizza rubbed his private genital area on a customer's pizza because he ordered it right before closing time. So he just didn't want to work anymore.
Wait a minute. Was this a hot, cheesy pizza?
Oh, it had Canadian bacon on it, too. So
you
and he rubbed himself all over
oily.
It. Yes.
Do you want your private area anywhere close to molten cheese?
Well, it makes you wonder what is up with kids these days. I don't get it.
And how's that going to speed up the process of getting out of there?
Well, it didn't because the customer actually saw him do it when he came in to pick up the pizza. So he got caught and the customer asked him, he's like, so how old are you? And he said 18. He goes, so yeah, you're old enough to know that you shouldn't put your balls on someone's pizza.
Oh,
yeah.
Now, that wasn't ladylike at all, was it?
It was not. That's why I had to apologize in advance. Yes.
That was a quote, in other words.
Yes, that would not come from my mouth unless I was reading it right here.
No, so the kid admitted to doing it.
He did. He
That's
did.
Fantastic.
And he, you know, pretty much knows it was wrong, but yeah. He just really wanted to be done
with
work.
They have those high-powered kitchen sprayers, you know, above the stove area there in most industrial kitchens, right? Pro kitchens. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure.
The big stainless steel thing, you turn it on, high power hose.
Yeah, the big hoods or
yeah.
whatever. Yeah.
Well, the hose thing that comes out.
What are you saying? Spray them down?
Yeah, well, with that cheese, you know, it hits body temperature and it starts to coagulate. And now you got a little.
But can you imagine just for ordering a pizza late, this is what happened. So think of all the things you could have done recently.
I missed the entire story. I kept fixating on private area in molten cheese. That's all I could think about.
Yeah, walking in and seeing it can't be pleasurable either.
They don't go well together.
Well, there are a lot of dumb guys out there. In fact, they seem to collect on airplanes, Jay.
It's basically Darwin's waiting room is an airplane, if you really want to think about it. A Southwest Airlines passenger... Basically, he's going to fly somewhere. I don't know where he's going to go. He's going to go from Seattle to Denver, right? It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But he sits down, and, you know, nowadays you can turn your phone into a Wi-Fi hotspot, or you can have these little tiny hotspots, and you take it in so you can use your own personal little network for your work computer or whatever you're going to do, watch movies or, you know, let the kids play video games, whatever you want to do. Idiot of the week.
Uh-oh.
Idiot of the week. He's now sitting in jail because of what he named his Wi-Fi hotspot. You know, because when you go to search for your Wi-Fi in your building or whatever, you see whatever is available. Uh-huh. You see your computer will search out whatever it can reach as far as Wi-Fi hotspots.
Now, what did he name his Wi-Fi hotspot?
Bomb on board.
Oh, great. Hey, and does he like pizza?
I don't know. I wonder if it is the same guy.
They could be good friends, at least.
It very well could be.
Yeah. Evidently, airline officials say the kid was probably just goofing off, and we see it as a joke, but we take things like this very seriously.
Of course. They need to.
Yes. So the pilot made a decision not to take off, and guy could be facing some charges.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of charges, we have the Minnesota Vikings. And, Chris, some changes happening with them, and they're kind of reacting, knee-jerk reacting, to just an onslaught of anger from football fans and just good folks out there, right?
Yeah, the fans are upset, many of them, because of the Adrian Peterson scandal, and now they've actually chosen to take down the Vikings message board, which is where all the fans get together and talk about the Purple People Eaters. The creator took it down. And now if you go onto that website, VikingsMessageBoard.com, it just says this board has been shut down permanently. It will not return. There are two primary reasons. Number one, the Vikings' cowardly decision to reinstate a child abuser and think that an apology will make this all blow over.
Oof.
We will not stand for this arrogance. And number two, we will not give a voice to thugs who think child abuse is a cultural or worse, openly advocate child abuse as a reasonable method of punishment. This ends here. So apparently some of the people were getting on the message board defending Adrian Peterson, and the owner of the message board had enough of it and decided to take it down permanently.
Wow.
Well, you know what? When you talk about the Vikings, it's an interesting study here. And the New York Times crunched the data on NFL players who have been arrested over the past 15 years.
Yeah, this can't be good.
The Minnesota Vikings have had 44 players arrested, cited, or charged since the year 2000, which is more than any other team.
Wow.
Also, DUIs are by far the most common type of arrest for NFL players. Hitting a four-year-old with a switch, I think, only came up once.
one of 44. Randy Moss holds 25 of those, by the way.
Does he?
Oh, good one. One final note on the Vikings. The Minnesota governor has come out and said, hey, I think Adrian Peterson needs to be suspended. Came out today that he said that. So
indefinitely or for the season? Did he give
he
any
just
specifics?
Said suspended.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, look, I don't think he should play until the facts come out. Because, you know, all of this stuff is alleged and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And
that's the response in all of these. The Ray Rice and McDonald over in San Francisco and Adrian Peterson. The owners and coaches seem to be saying, we want to wait to make final judgment until due process has taken its place. You know, let it go through the court system first, which seems like the right response, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Hey, have you thought much about where you would go if you heard a tsunami warning? Yeah, me neither. We'll look at our escape routes with an expert from the USGS next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.
All right, here we go again. Another great segment here on the program. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends.
If a tsunami hit, where would you go? And how much time would you have to go there? Scientists at the U.S. Geological Survey have developed a new mapping tool. It's called the Pedestrian Evacuation Analyst. I think it is. Watch, I'll be wrong. Anyway, this is for use by researchers and emergency managers to estimate how long it would take for someone, perhaps you, to travel on foot out of a tsunami hazard zone. And you know, we could have one here sooner or later. Just a matter of time. Joining us live to explain more about this is USGS geographer Nathan Wood. Hi, Nathan. Thanks for being on with us.
Hi, Phil. Thanks for having me.
Now, is this a map like you roll out on a table, or is it software?
Right now, we've developed software, but it's something that someone could make a map out of it and roll it out on a table.
So you can find the I am here, you are here thing, put that button on your map, and then you look at the routes that are the safest for you to get away from the water, right?
Exactly. The tool is designed to help emergency managers and others try to get a sense of how long it would take folks to get out of an area, and we think the main use of it would be kind of twofold. One is for areas that we show you can make it out, that's great, and we want to educate people that it is possible to survive these tsunamis. In areas where it's not likely, because it's so far and you've got little time, we don't want to be pessimistic. The attitude more is, well, here's an opportunity to maybe talk about vertical evacuation structures, like a new parking garage, a new hill, something that they could build to serve as a high ground nearby.
Right, and when you look it up, and I looked it up, and I had no idea when I bought my house that I'm right in the middle of a floodplain. I'm nowhere close to a lake, but I'm still in a floodplain because there's a reservoir some 50 miles away that if that breaks, it's coming straight for me. And so many of us here in Southern California, perhaps up in Northern California, is the same thing. And you're in Oregon, are you not?
I'm in Portland, that's right.
Yeah, all right. So just about everywhere, you're going to be not too far from some kind of a floodplain. And, of course, on the West Coast here, we're near the ocean. So you have all of these different things to consider. And does your map actually figure out where the water is going to flow?
That's a great question. No, it doesn't. We actually work really tightly with state agencies, like in California, the California Geological Survey. And they're the folks in each of the states that are doing a lot of great work figuring out where the water might show up for a certain scenario, like an earthquake off the coast of Japan or off the coast of Alaska. And for California, back in 2009, they came out with a series of maps that allow you to look online and find your house, where you work, where you drop your kids off at school, and figure out if you're in this zone or not. And that zone is made up of all different types of sources, because in Southern California, you could be hit by waves coming from all different directions around the Pacific Ocean. So we take that, what I would call the bad zone, the hazard zone from the state folks, and then we use it as one of the inputs into our model to figure out, okay, if this is where water is going to show up and this is where the state folks think safe ground is, how long would it take someone to get from this point, say your house, to that place that the state folks think might be safe from a certain tsunami?
Yeah, all right, so timing is everything. And let's say, worst case scenario, Santa Catalina or one of the other Channel Islands, a big chunk of one of those islands drops off the shelf, which is a possibility. That's a zone that we look at. That's not too far from the coast. What kind of time are we looking at if we want to get away in time, if we live in a tsunami hazard zone, which in that case, if one of those things happen, just about everybody's in an unsafe zone?
Sure. You know, that's a tough one, because I know when they came out with those report, that big map back in 2009 for the state, they make a huge disclaimer to say that they really don't have a good sense about landslide-related tsunamis, that they included them as inputs into their models to figure out potential hazard zones, but really the timing is so unknown, especially the recurrence of these things, whether they'll even happen again. So it's, you framed it well, that it's possible, but whether it's probable, that's kind of a big unknown. But if it were to happen, you're probably talking minutes to evacuate. And one of the things that we've been doing in other parts of the Pacific Ocean, we've done a lot of work in the Northwest with what's called the Cascadia subduction zone, or up in Alaska with their own local hazard zone or earthquake zones, is we try to make the case that with tsunamis, it's one of the few hazards where it's up to the individual to understand the threat and know what to do about it. Like, it's rarely going to be just the building, like with earthquakes, that determines whether you get hurt or not. It's really about the individual taking the onus themselves to say, okay, I'm in a zone. Do I know how to get out of here? Do I know where to go? Do I know where my family is? And not just, and you, I think you said this earlier really well, it's not just where I live, but where do I work? Where do I shop? Where do my kids go to daycare? What parks do I go to? Because we used to get a lot of pushback of, oh, this is just a coastal issue of the people that live in it. And we make the point, especially for you, I would imagine, in Southern California, the culture is so wrapped around the beach that you have to assume pretty much everyone in all the counties down there are going into a tsunami zone at some point in their lives within the month.
Yeah, and if you're driving too fast, you might not see the signs because they are out there. They do post them, tsunami danger area or hazard area. Now, if you have a couple of options. If you hear a tsunami warning, you can evacuate. But if you can't evacuate, then you want to get to higher ground, which we don't have a whole lot of here in Southern California in many areas. Mm-hmm. But we see the kind of damage water can do. We just had a storm here off Southern California's coast, and we have jetties out here in the L.A. Harbor. And there were a couple of places where these boulders that they make the jetties out of that are several tons each just get picked up by the waves and dropped in various places. So the water can do a lot of damage. So it doesn't make much sense to sit on your rooftop, does it?
No, not really. That's one other thing we try to educate with tsunamis, is that even if the wave comes from Alaska and it takes 5 hours before it ends up hitting the Southern California coast, or the 2011 Tohoku event where it took almost 10 hours to get to you, well, it may not look like a very big wave, but could have a really high current speed. So in those harbors, it could be going 8 knots, which can easily pull big boats off of their moorings and throw them around like a big pinball within the harbor. And that can last, especially within harbors, for a good 2 or 3 days. So you might get the all clear of, oh, the tsunami wave is gone, but you've got boats slamming around inside these ports for a good couple of days. And so we always recommend that your first option should be, or intention, is to always get out of the hazard zone horizontally, meaning drive out, walk out, depending on how long you have. Really try to get out. If you can't get out, then seeking high ground within a building is your best option. Because, again, with a lot of these, most of the threats for the California coast, or the Southern California coast, are these southern distant events where you do have 4 or 5 hours. Hopefully you can get out, but if, say, gridlock kicks in and you can't get out, then going to a high floor in a building is probably your best option. So that the waves kind of flow around the building, probably destroy, you know, stuff on the first floor inside of it, but hopefully the building itself is still there and you can come out after the waves. And that's the other part, is there are multiple waves. It's not just one wave. You can see over the course of a day 5 or 6 rounds of waves coming in every couple of hours.
Yeah.
And often if not the first wave, it's the second or third that's your biggest.
All right, so we're just going to take a look here in Southern California. We have several beach areas. You have the flatter areas like Hermosa Beach, where if a tsunami came, the whole area is going to get flooded. But then you go a little farther south, and you get into the Redondo Beach area, where the main street where everybody drives is, I don't know, Jay, you live in the area. What would you say, about 50 feet up from the sand?
A good 50 feet, sure.
Yeah, right. And so a tsunami hits 50 feet. Is that enough of a vertical evacuation refuge point, or are we kidding ourselves?
It totally depends on the scenario or the type of event that's hitting you. Again, if it's that Alaskan or Japanese or Chilean, the other part is the timing of the tides. You could have a really major tsunami come in, but if it's low tide, it would do damage to the boat still, but you might not see any water on that road in Redondo. So what we always try to emphasize to folks is to go to that great site at California Geological, and Cal OES worked with them as well on these maps, and you get a sense of what roads are in that maximum zone so that you know if you do get the warning, at the very least you reroute on your commute home and don't drive on that road. Just, I tend to be kind of risk averse, and I don't want to throw the dice too much. So if I hear there's a warning, I'll take the extra minutes and go out of my way to just avoid that area.
Yeah, get out of harm's way for sure. Yeah. Thank you. Nathan Wood, USGS geographer. I think we feel a little safer now.
Thank you. Thanks, Phil.
All right. There you go. Hey, it's hot. We can't deny it. Let's start talking about cooler temperatures and the cool colors of fall when the leaves turn. You know what I'm talking about, right? It's a beautiful scene. And the coolest places to go see them. Where are they? Our travel guy knows, and he joins us next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. And to read a quote from my wife here, she just instant messaged me, "Vermont in the fall, baby. I want to see that so much." Yeah, it does sound beautiful when the trees turn and the leaves change and there's that cornucopia of color. It is something. And it's more than just Vermont. That's a place that springs to mind right away. So let's trick our brains into thinking about cooling off. It's been so hot here in SoCal, and we want it to cool off. Gary Warner is our travel dude, and he joins us live now to help transport our brains to a better place. Gary?
Boy, don't we all want to have it somewhere else about 30, 40 degrees cooler right around now?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And because the only color we see right now is hot. And do you think of Vermont first? Is that the first place we go?
Well, yeah. I lived in the East for quite a long time, and my wife's from New England. So, yeah, Vermont, New Hampshire always comes to mind. Although it's kind of like a conga line of cars all during the foliage season.
Oh,
there.
Really? So has it gotten that way? It just gets really crowded.
Yeah, you know, it can get that way. Although the weekdays are still nice, but you know, weekends, boy, it's nuts. But
so you have to find a better place then that's off the beaten path, but just as beautiful.
Yeah, or just, you know, really what it is when the buses and the cars get off the road in the evening, you know, the late afternoon and early morning before everyone's out on the road, that's when it's really magical. Then after that, it gets a little bit hectic, but it's still beautiful.
When are the deer ticks out?
When are the deer ticks out? You know, I think I've cut that one out of my mind.
For the
deer kick ticks.
But it
there.
Is but, fun to know, go back to the cabin and check your partner
you know,
for deer
and,
ticks.
And you know, and this is going to be a great year for, especially in New England and in the Mid Atlantic states and down to North Carolina and such. If you think of the planet is kind of like a garden. That portion of the garden has done very well this year, and that there's been a good amount of rain, not a whole lot of wind events, you know, not a whole lot of hurricanes and things like that. So they're expecting a really good leaf season this year.
And so many of these places too, they have so much history. So you're not just looking at leaves while you're out there. I mean, Revolutionary
That's right.
War, you have the covered bridges and Bennington Monument in Vermont, for instance, and Civil War areas. There's so much history.
Yeah, there really is. And, you know, I have about, you know, four or five favorite places, and this goes across the country. I mean, when you think of fall foliage, everyone has a tendency, yeah, Vermont is what they start to think of. But you can go to fall foliage in the Ozarks, up in Door County, in Wisconsin, Big Bear, Lake area, the Willamette Valley in Oregon is got some outstanding colors around up there. But here would be my big five, and I'm throwing in some Western ones in there because I think we got to be fair.
Good.
First one's Grafton, Vermont. It's a nice little town in Vermont. It's a lot of it's owned by a historic preservation group, so they've kept it from turning into a bunch of, you know, White Castle and Dunkin' Donuts and things like that. And so the place looks great around the. Columbus Day is really the time to go up there, October 6th to 10th, and that's where you're getting your red maples and things like that. And you probably know this, Phil, but just so people don't know this, you know, fall, the beauty of fall is really about death. It's about death, yes, because what it is is that's
so delightful, Gary. That's nice.
The beautiful colors of these trees, these reds, these yellows, these browns, these oranges, they're there all the time. And there's this big dominating thing called chlorophyll. And it is green, and it loves the sun. And so when it's sunny out, it just obliterates everything else. Now, when it starts to get cold, the chlorophyll starts to get choked off, and it dies off. And all these other colors, which are already there, start to come out. So, you know, you think of the leaves turning, but really what it is it's the green disappearing, dying off. That's what we're really seeing.
Wow, I had no idea you were so botanically
sound.
I'm just
something else, you know.
Easy. Grafton, Vermont. That's only
Grafton,
one
Vermont,
place so far.
Yeah,
you have
okay.
five.
Down, you talked about history. Asheville, North Carolina is a spot I really like. It's more like towards the last 2 weeks of October. A lot of history there, old lodges. It's a big hangout for F. Scott Fitzgerald and a lot of the writers from the 20s and the 30s. Again, beautiful maples and other trees down that way. I also love a place called the Mohawk Mountain House, which is in the Hudson River Valley. And it's a resort that was built by sort of like the teetotaler crowd back around the turn of the last century. Looks like a big, huge national park lodge, and you can get a drink there now. But it's next to a beautiful lake there, and just an outstanding spot. Just
Mohawk
a
what?
Spot. Mohawk Mountain House, and it's about halfway up. The Hudson River Valley, across from Poughkeepsie, one of my favorite names, towns.
Upstate New York.
Upstate New York. Not quite getting up to the Adirondacks in that area, which is also a great area. But they're around October 8th. And then real quick, a couple of more local ones. Out here, the big tree is the aspen. And it's a little monochromatic. It's one color. But they are really fantastic to see in the fall. And I really like the area around Aspen, Colorado, of course. The Maroon Bells and Cathedral Lake are just gorgeous. Late September is actually when they crank up, a little bit earlier because they're up in the mountains. And there's a series of drives outside of Salt Lake City, mostly up towards the Sundance, you know, Robert Redford's resort, with just beautiful waterfalls and the aspens. Just sort of sparkling in the sun. It's just a great spot.
What's our window before the snow comes and ruins it for everybody?
Well, that's the thing, is that you never know what's going to happen, what's going to come along. You're starting as early as if you wanted to go all the way up to Canada or to coastal Maine. You're already looking at it's starting to turn now in some of the parts of coastal Canada, and then really it goes probably into late November, and where you'll see that often. You know, one of the best places to see fall colors. In November, around Thanksgiving Day, is in Central Park, in New York.
No kidding. And it is a beautiful park. Have you ever had a chance to walk through there?
It's a gorgeous park.
Yeah.
Absolutely
And it's a great deal safer than those movies from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. There's no more panic in Needle Park, although I guess that was a different park. But yeah. No. Hey. It's a great spot.
Talking about great spots, I mean, historically, and we're going to go off the page here, a different topic altogether.
Sure.
For Southern California, a weekend in Cabo. You know, if you do it right, you forget about your weekend in Cabo. But there's some problems down there because of our recent storm. Cabo got hit pretty hard, didn't it?
Just hammered really hard. I was watching some TV today, and there's a big Westin resort that's in what they call the Zona Turista, which is between the airport and actually Cabo San Lucas, the point down there. It looks like something out of, like a Martian hotel. It's big and huge. But you think if anything could hold up, it could. Now, it didn't fall over or anything like that, but all the windows were blown out. It just looked like it had been bombed. And so it's just a mess down there. And we got to remember that we do get hurricanes here on the Pacific coast, and that people have a tendency, they look at vacations and they see these cruises either in the Caribbean or down to Baja in the fall, beginning really in August, and they're thinking, man, these are great rates. And what it is you know, you're kind of gambling up against Mother Nature there, and these either hurricanes or tropical storms or just bad storms. And that's when, you know, I got more complaints every year as a travel editor at the Orange County Register about the West Coast cruises down to Baja, where the captains, out of a lot of safety and security, would cancel the portion down to actually to Cabo because they were worried about the storm. So basically people got on a boat and they went to Catalina and they went to Ensenada, and that wasn't quite what they had in mind. When you're talking about $199, $299 per person, you kind of get what you pay for, and that's why there's these discounts this time of year.
Yeah, it's counting you to be snooty, you know.
Yeah.
Spend $500, $600, $700, $1,200. How much do you spend?
How much would I spend? Well, you know,
you're a reviewer. You get this. You get the freebies.
No. I don't take the freebies. Never taken a freebie in my life. I travel anonymously and always paid my own way, which is part of the reason why I'm probably out on the bricks right now. I would always have the company would pay my way.
Yeah.
I like more adventurous things, like we talked about the tall ship, funky little sailboats that went around the Caribbean. That was more my thing.
Yeah.
But these big cruise lines, I mean, when you're talking about these ships that are, they really look like, you know, some sort of like Wilshire Boulevard building on their side floating around, they can put a lot of people on those things, and they can get down to $199, $299, not a night, but for the whole thing. I'm talking about, and meals and the whole bit.
Right.
But when you're seeing really, really low prices, I mean, you know, you got to ask yourself, you know, why is it they're doing that? And they're doing that because there might be some problems, and it's right there in the contract that if act of God or whatever like that, and the captain has the right. And I've had people call me on their cell phones and say, I'm off of Catalina and I can see my house in Orange County, you know, and they're charging me for this cruise. And, you know, you got to say, hey, look at the contract.
Yeah. Spend $1.99 for the trip. You know, they might as well just drop you in Cabo.
Right.
Go surfing.
Yeah. You know, I'd say, you know, head on up the go on up to Alaska or something like that. You know, you're probably picking, you know, twice that amount minimum. Yeah. But go do that.
Gotcha. Gary Warner, where are you going next week? Where are we headed?
Well, you know, I just got back from San Diego. I was sort of a surprise trip, went down to San Diego and just had a great time. You know, San Diego has the lowest average high temperature in the United States, so there's not a lot of ultra hot days there.
And it's sure mild. Enough,
it's mild. It doesn't spike up. So last night I went out to Petco Park, saw the ball game, and it was humid because of all that moisture that's coming up from Baja. But still, it was 74, you know, 73 degrees. Whereas when I was up here in Southern California.
Like?
You know, it was like, you know, 93, you know, 95, 100 degrees. 100 degrees at my kid's school up in Anaheim Hills. Boy, you know, it's like I should have bought some bread and just left it in the car.
Good idea.
I'd have dinner ready.
Gary Warner, thanks as always. Our air conditioner here in the studio is blinking a little warning. It says, give me a break.
You know, on Sunday during the Chargers game, where the San Diego Chargers did defeat the defending world champion Seattle Seahawks,
yeah,
by the way.
Right.
They were saying it was 120 degrees down on the field during that game, which in San Diego just seems incredible for it to get that hot.
Yeah. Well, something about the sand, the turf or whatever it is down there, it just gathers the heat. And
all that body heat, too.
Magnifies it.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, we have a lot coming up. You know that that pesky U2 album that's on your iTunes that you can't get rid of?
Yes.
Is it making you mad?
Yes.
We have help.
Really?
Next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. I'm lucky to grow up where I could be whatever I want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You are a waste. a loser. Everyone hates you. Why don't you just stay in your car and keep driving? I'm serious. Drive until you run out of gas, then get out of your car and walk until you find someone who doesn't think you're dumber than bricks. Could take a while, but at least all that walking might burn a couple of calories.
You may not witness bullying like this every day. Your kids do. They want to help, but they don't know how. Visit StopBullying.gov to learn safe, simple ways your child can help stop bullying. Be more than a bystander at StopBullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
All right, here we go. Our final segment on this edition of Phil Hewlett and Friends. So glad you are enjoying it.
What?
Now, all right, don't get me off track. You're enjoying the show, right? Okay, good. Yeah, just enjoy the show. Thank you. All right, so here we go. You've got the iTunes. You've got it all set up. You've got your music on there. It's all synced up, and all of a sudden, your favorite band, U2, is on there with their new album, Songs of Innocence, and you don't like any of the songs. You wish it would go away, and it won't. Chris, what do you do now?
Well, you have to use their new tool or their new support team, all of this that they have initiated in order to solve the problem of all the people on iTunes that don't like the fact that they automatically were downloaded YouTube's new album.
YouTube.
Songs of Innocence. It's an 11-song album. You know,
there's been outrage.
As of last week, all 500 million iTunes subscribers were downloaded the new U2 album, and not all of them are happy. Matter of fact, some of them were tweeting. For example, they said, "I don't know who put U2 on my iTunes, but this is the worst prank imaginable."
Wow. Yeah, exactly.
Another person, obviously of a younger generation, says, "Who is U2, and why do their songs keep popping up on my iPhone?"
Good for you.
Aren't there worse things in the world than this?
Yeah, but see, here's the,
not much. Not much worse.
You know,
but what's next? If they can put an entire album on my phone without me knowing and without me wanting it,
oh, they'll
what
be
else
spying
can
on you, for sure.
Bingo.
Yes.
Right.
Not
ooh,
like
the slippery slope.
Yeah.
That's
exactly
what the next U2 album should be called. But Apple paid a ton of money to U2 for U2's press release to say that we are the most downloaded album in history, 500 million, right?
That's so lame. And they, oh, really? That's the deal?
I mean, think about it. I mean, I'm not saying specifically that's the deal, but
right,
I just
right
connected the dots here. Apple did pay U2 a ton of money for this.
A
and so U2's not selling the record. It's a free record, but everybody gets it. So
everyone's mad.
Yeah, and now everyone's mad.
So get to this tool, because I'm going to like see if I can do it right now, because I want it off my – I hate U2.
You'll find it in the tools. You can either go on to online support, or you can go on to the tools of your iTunes account, and there will be an easy one-step process. You could remove it yourself before, but now they're just simplifying it to an easy one-step process. But you have to get a hold of customer support.
Yeah.
But by the way, as of yesterday, only 33 million of the 500 people on iTunes have actually accessed the album.
500 million? 33 yeah million out of 500 million have
right
accessed it. Okay.
Yeah.
And the rest of the people don't know how to use their iTunes.
That's what I'm doing right now.
That's what
I'm
like, as well.
I'm just pushing things. See what pops up. I have no idea.
One of them will work. Just keep going.
You know, I use iHeartRadio. Like, when I listen, I don't listen to anything else. That's all I listen to.
Oh. Well, see, the thing with the iTunes player is there are all sorts of things hidden in it. You have to kind of know where they are to use
that's
it properly.
True.
It's not the most it never has been the most straightforward player on the planet.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll do this again with, you know, another band now.
Yeah, Tool. And then you'll have to look up the Tool.
Now, if they did it for Kenny Loggins, I'm in.
What?
Yeah.
500 million downloads of Kenny Loggins? You think people are mad about you, too. You just wait for a tsunami of anger.
Yeah, you'll get mail, too, for suggesting that now.
Yeah, all right. Gosh. Well, you got so hopped up on this U2 thing, Jay. I thought you were like, got an extra jolt of caffeine in you.
No, but did you hear what soda from the 90s is making a giant comeback?
No.
Surge.
Surge Cola.
Surge Cola.
That was out for like a week.
Yeah. Well, no.
So it was good.
96 to 2002, it
no
was
kidding
out.
6 years, huh?
Yes. I didn't realize it was that as well. You were old enough to remember that, right, Chris?
The name sounds familiar, but honestly, I thought of Fanta when you asked the question.
Oh, Fanta?
I thought of Fanta, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Fanta never went away.
Yeah, it's still here.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, went away in my world.
It's because the Fanta girls aren't around anymore.
The sugar-filled soft drink originally debuted in 1996, discontinued in 2002, but thanks to a passionate and persistent community of brand loyalists, Coca-Cola is going to bring it back. It's going to be sold in 16-ounce cans. They're going to be sold in 12-packs. You can buy them on Amazon for $14.
Really?
Yes.
Real sugar in there?
Oh, get this. 56 grams of sugar per can.
Real sugar.
Probably. I don't know. Some chemical somewhere.
Not fructose, corn syrup, or that sort of thing, right?
But it's a citrus flavor, so it tastes like Mountain Dew with more sugar.
Okay.
Same amount of caffeine. Is it loaded with caffeine?
This just is more of like a sugary soft drink, so it's not like an energy drink.
Yeah.
It's more of just like a sugar. It's like... It's basically you're drinking a pixie stick. That's what you're doing.
Oh, yum. Yeah. Right. Hey, Aaron, are we going to get that football song from Rihanna?
I don't think so at this point. She's not happy about what happened last week when CBS pulled her song from the kickoff of Thursday Night Football. So I guess, you know, they did this after Ray Rice's video was leaked of, you know, him knocking out his then-fiancée unconscious. So they decided to pull that song with Jay-Z and air a more serious pregame report. Well, Rihanna's finally, you know, lashed back out and said that she feels re-victimized and is not okay with it. And, you know, quote, she says, CBS, you pulled my song last week. Now you want to slide it back in this Thursday. No. Beep you. You're all sad for...
Beep you? What does that stand for?
That's not ladylike.
That's so vulgar.
Yeah, I know. I'm horrible today. You are all sad for penalizing me for this. The audacity. And we all know she was assaulted back in 2009 by her then-boyfriend Chris Brown. So, you know, just a lot of controversy about it. And so she's not happy about this decision.
Well, you know what? When I heard that they were going to pull her from the show, I figured, okay, they think she's going to go off the rails. It's going to be in the middle of the show or the middle of the song, and she's going to say one line and then move on.
Or she's going to flash the audience.
So she's going to do, yeah, you know, she's going to do something ridiculous to ruin it. And, you know, in this society, you can't be too careful because somebody's going to sue somebody.
Yeah, but it had nothing to do with that. It was corporate fear of having a victim of abuse being on a show on a Thursday Night Football game that featured the Baltimore Ravens right after this incident.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, like, you get her up there and she's like, you know, something, something NFL. Thanks for my paycheck. And then drops the mic and that's it.
It's an interesting time for football.
Yes.
How do you pick? How do you pick a winner? Maybe you go to the Oracle of Omaha to get your picks.
Go to Warren Buffett. He knows what he's doing. He went out and actually placed his first ever sports bet this weekend. He bet on the Nebraska Cornhuskers. He placed a $500 bet on a 12.5-point spread and won $500.
How about that?
Yeah. Nice.
Pay a dollar to make a dollar every day.
Yeah, a bunch of other people saw him do it and joined him. They also won.
Smart money. Hey, we love your comments. Email us feedback@PhilHewlettAndFriends on Twitter. We're at FAF Show, PHAF Show. Facebook.com/PhilHewlettAndFriends. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our production assistant in training, Nikki Lucius, our theme song composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Aaron Myers, Jay Campadonia, and Chris Martin, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.